Good evening and welcome to the regular board meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. The board did meet in closed session. We discussed the public employee performance evaluation on the superintendent, and then we also had a conference with our labor negotiators, and we discussed negotiations with California School Employees Association, the Confidential Employees, San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, and the Service Employees International Union. Is there a consensus on the order of business? Okay. Let's go forward then, and we don't have any action on the closed session items. Let's look for approval of the minutes, please. I believe we have two sets of minutes. Somebody like to make a motion on the minutes of May 24th?
I'll move to approve the minutes of May 24th.
And I'll second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to approve the minutes of May 24th. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0. We have amended minutes for May 31st. The note was that there was a correction on who from the administration was in attendance at the meeting. Would somebody like to make a motion on the minutes of May 31st?
I move we approve the minutes of May 31st.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion on the minutes of May 31st?
All right. So we had two girls who recently placed second in state for track and field, Elena Clark for pole vault, and she will be attending UCLA next year to pole vault, and Abriana Torres for the long jump, and she will be attending Colorado University at Boulder next fall. So we're pretty proud of them. All right. We are very close to the end of our school year, and our upcoming school events include our senior picnic, which is Friday, June 10th, this Friday at Cuesta Park. Finals are next week, June 14th through the 17th. On Thursday, June 16th, we have our senior showcase where seniors show off their special talents. Many of them are hidden, so we're excited to see those. the last day of school is on June 17th. And graduation for us seniors is on the 18th at 4:30 at Holt Field. All of you are welcome to come watch us walk across that stage. We have our senior grad night later that night at Kennedy Fitness Club on June 18th as well. And I would like to give a special thank you to this year's school board. It's been a pleasure meeting and working with you all. That's all I got.
Thank you, Julie.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and good luck. And you're graduating, I take
I
it.
Am.
So we'll get to shake your hand and congratulations. Yeah. What are you going to do after you
I'm leave? Going to Boulder as well with AB.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
So
what are you
going to
study there?
Business. I'm not sure what concentration yet, but
business and skiing or something?
Never skied before, okay. But I'm going to.
Beautiful hiking there.
Yeah, that's what I
heard. Amanda, this is the last time we'll get to see you too, except for Thursday night.
Thursday night.
Yep.
Yeah, memorable one for me at least. So upcoming events, obviously are a few. We have 2 weeks left of school. Finals testing starts June 14th through the 16th. Senior tribute night, which is where we honor all of our seniors who are receiving scholarships and their cords. And that is June 14th at 6. Our senior outing is at the Ravine this year, and that will be on June 15th. And that will take place during the school day. Graduation is June 16th at 5. Didn't have to look down for that one. Grad night is following graduation at Magic Mountain. And accomplishments for this year that we take pride in is our 6 successful dances, which that includes prom, where our students' attendance was the highest that it has been in school history. So each dance, if it was prom or the neon dance, so we got more attendance this year than last year. And so we're really excited that our student involvement was that high. New student section at the football games, which is located behind the end zone. If any of you were able to make it to our football games, you would see our lovely cheer section there. We had a spring carnival to de-stress and excited students for CST testing, which included a water balloon fight, and bounce houses,
dunk tank,
pretty much all around fun right before CST testing. And right now we have a mural in progress, which is being done by our very own Lauren Fisher and Rosalind Murtha. and hopefully it'll be done before graduation, for they're both seniors, so it'd be nice to have a finished mural up at Morabe High School. No promises. And Haley will take away with our plans for next year. She will be our
increase student involvement in activities and provide new things for students that they like. So.
And to close it, I would just like to thank the board members and all my fans that are watching at home. It's been a privilege to be on this board and meet all you lovely people. I've had many opportunities in life, and next year I have the opportunity to attend CSU Chico, where I'll be studying something in education. So I'll be there for a while. Surprise. So again, thank you all, and have a good night.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Amanda. We appreciate you, too. We've always had great student board members from all of three of the high schools. You know, we know that sometimes it's probably difficult for you to come out on Tuesday nights when you have a lot to do, and the things you add to us really enrich the board and enrich our knowledge of what goes on in the schools. So thank you. And Amanda, you can sign autographs a little bit later.
$1 each.
Thank you to both of you for your contributions.
Yes. Absolutely. So let's go ahead then with acknowledgement of retiring employees. Mr. Robinette.
You'll notice me scanning the room trying to see if who's here and who's not. This is always an exciting time and kind of a bittersweet time, actually, for a lot of us as we say goodbye to some fantastic employees. As I reflect on my own 30 years so far in the business, I know that it's really good work to devote a career into the learning organization and specifically into public schools, because you know deep in your heart that a profound difference is being made in the lives of children. And the instant results aren't often there, the immediate appreciations are not generally evident, but an enlightened society is dependent on this work. And the people we are honoring have made that profound difference. They are secretaries, teachers, administrators, counselors, technicians, food service workers, aides, specialists, and bus drivers. They represent the best in our field, and tonight we want to appreciate their years of service in San Luis Coastal. We know that there have been many site-based celebrations that have happened and will be happening, so in the interest of time tonight, I have asked supervisors to say very few brief comments about those who are present, and knowing that we just can't do justice to their many accolades in our brief time. And in fact, those that aren't present to be acknowledged, I've said, I'll just read their names at the end to kind of just keep things moving, because this could go on for hours, and we've seen that before. Just as we did last year, we will be donating a book in honor of our retirees to the school of their choice or the district library. The individuals were able to choose their own title, and I think you're going to find a wonderful legacy display. We'll have a reception afterwards, and you'll be able to take a look at some of the books that our retirees have chosen. It's pretty impressive. And I'd like to thank Debbie Juergens and Sharon Haupt for their work putting that part together. I'm asking supervisors to kind of come up and bring their retiree up and say a few words, it might be some pauses, because I don't know if we have I tried to give sort of an order of operations, but I imagine it'll get messed up along the way. But to illustrate how it's done, I'd like to invite Brenda Karliskind up here. Brenda. Calls were coming in at the same time. If there were people at the desk, it didn't matter how things were going on in her personal life. Brenda was always professional and nice and courteous to everybody. She worked in our school district beginning in 2002, so she doesn't have as much longevity as some of the other people you hear about, but after having a very successful Karliskind florist, which if you've been around, you know that, for a large number of years. And I know she is home and enjoying being home with her husband, Barry, and those wonderful grandbabies. And I just want to thank you, Brenda, for everything you've done for our organization. And I think Amelia's next.
Well, I'm really pleased to share with you some background on Ron Scow, who was with the district about 15 years. Ron retired mid-year And it has been different not having Ron in the office, for sure. Ron started back in 1996 under Alan Fillmore, who was a previous computer services manager. And at that time, there were only three servers in our district, one at each of the two comprehensive high schools and one at the district office. The inter-school networking was not the fiber that we enjoy today, the fast speed. In fact, it was dial-up networking, the old telephone line. Some of us may remember that. Some of these students probably don't know what the heck I'm talking about. But Ron helped set up our first inter-networking in the district and also worked with a previous network specialist in doing that, Darren Golnick, who was here previously. Then later on came the UMAN fiber connectivity, and Peter McDonald was instrumental and one of the consultants that helped design that for a district, a very costly endeavor that has really paid off. When I arrived in 2004, Ron was one of two network specialists in the department, working side by side with Don Orr, who was just recently recognized at our previous board meeting. So Ron was always really personable and willing to try anything new, as long as I always had a plan A and a plan B, so that if plan A fell through, we'd always have plan B. He'd always say, well, let's aim for plan A, but we'll probably end up with plan B, right? So as James York always says, the most successful people are those who are good at plan B. So that's what we typically do. During the last few years in IST, Ron also managed to fit time into his busy schedule, usually riding his bike to work, often visiting his grandkids who live several hours away with his lovely wife, Nancy, who's here tonight, and volunteer many hours with hospice, still doing that. He was just telling me about the latest technology project that they're doing. So I'd like to wish Ron well and thank him for the 15 years of service to our district. It's been fantastic, and we're going to miss him terribly.
There you go. I won't shake that hand.
I have another retiree in our department who isn't able to be here, but she sent me a threep who knew the contents of an overflow could be so fascinating to children. As my boys, if you guys know Nancy, you can hear her, right, saying this. As my boys went through the district, she says, I worked under five superintendents. I feel fortunate to have worked with several of the district's greats, amongst them the late John Honeyman, a visionary and the founding father of our district's computer program, Pat Perry, a great administrator and financial wizard, and the late John Cook, who was commonly known as the district's wise man. After taking a two-year leave to complete my degree at Cal Poly, I returned to the district to work full-time, where I thoroughly enjoyed my work at BG&T. I was admin assistant to Brad Parker, who's now retired, and who managed the district's $130 million Measure A project. When the project ended in 2001, I transferred to Computer Services, now referred to as Information Services and Technology, and consider those to be the best times I had since 2004, when the new director was hired and a large infusion of funds began what I call the Great Infrastructure and Technology Upgrade from 2005 to 2009. During my 25 years with San Luis Coastal, I saw the district move from no computers to Apples to PCs, from AppleWorks to WordPerfect to Microsoft Word to OpenOffice, dot matrix printers to inkjets to laser printers, from 5-inch floppy disks to 3.5-inch disks to CDs to DVDs, and now smartphones, e-readers, iPads, netbooks, and all kinds of slates. So even though I often describe myself as a non-techie in a techie world, I recognize my fellow co-workers in IST to be an exceptionally talented team, and I will truly miss the great times we shared. I personally, Amelia Simoes, feel blessed to have worked with Nancy as my admin assistant for 7 years. So I wanted to share her words and thank her for her 25 years of service to our district. Thank you.
See what I mean about the order of operations. We have someone who didn't show up. So Mary Lou Gooden, why don't you come up and do your presentations? Thank you.
The 2-minute time limit is quite a challenge for several of us here standing at the podium right now, so I'm just going to make it short and sweet. This is the perfect occasion to read one of my favorite poems, and it's by Ralph Waldo Emerson. It's called Success. What is success? To laugh often and love much, to win the respect of intelligent persons and the affections of children. To earn the approbation of honest critics and endure the betrayal of false friends, to appreciate beauty, to find the best in others, to give of oneself, to leave the world a bit better, whether by a healthy child, a garden patch, or a redeemed social condition, to have played and laughed with enthusiasm and sung with exultation, to know even one life has breathed easier because you have lived, this is to have succeeded. These two...
Good evening. I'm Dan Andrus, principal at Morbay High School. I'd like to welcome Carolyn Boomer up with me so we can honor her. Carolyn, I know she's here. There you are. Carolyn has been teaching at Morbay High School since 1973. That's 37 years. You can come up here with me. 38. All right. When she started at Morro Bay High School, it was a 7-12 junior-senior high school combination, and she started teaching the junior high English and the high school PE. She served as the girls' athletic director and stayed on when it became a senior high school and has taught PE and English for quite a while. I'm going to share three things with you that I think will sum up what I need to say about Carolyn. First of all, Carolyn has taught for many years almost all of the sophomore English classes. Now, the culmination of sophomore English is the high school exit exam. The state pass rate is about 63 to 64% annually. Carolyn's pass rate usually is around 97 to 98% on the high school exit exam. So we know that her students are learning. The next important thing you need to know is this year in Mock Rock, one of our largest campus clubs did a special tribute to Mrs. Boomer by singing Sweet Caroline because they wanted to make sure that she knew that she was loved by her students as well. In talking to Mrs. Boomer, she pointed out that this year, her last year when she got to slack off and relax, she missed a total of one period in her classroom this year when a migraine finally drove her out of the room. Now, she claims that's because she doesn't like to fill out sub-paperwork, but I think the reality is that Ms. Boomer just loves to be with her students, and I know her students love to be with her. So congratulations, Ms. Boomer. Our other retiree from Morro Bay High School is Bob Schwanoa. Come on up here, Bob. Now, Bob does not remember this, but the first time I met Bob Schwanoa was in 1985 when I was a senior in high school. I was visiting friends in Los Osos, and they said, we have to go to the arcade. I said, why? We don't really like arcade games. They said, no, you just have to meet Bob. You see, Bob at that time owned the local arcade. And a lot of the teenagers at Los Osos went to the arcade so they could hang out with Bob. Bob enjoyed that so much, he started volunteering at the high school to help tutor with math. They roped him into being a teacher and moved him up into ASB, where he served for several years, really with that passion for students and student activities. And that's what's defined Bob's tenure at Morro Bay High School as teacher, ASB director, and dean, is a passion for students, wanting to give students the best opportunity possible at that school. Kids come into his office not just for discipline, but they come voluntarily for counsel, for guidance, for math tutoring. In fact, I've seen kids sent up to the office from in public. It's been nice schwinoing you, Bob.
Bravo. Good evening, everyone. Will Jones, principal of San Luis Obispo High School. And if I could have Patsy Reed please come up to the lectern. The facts are that Patsy Reed has been an amazingly committed and successful resource specialist for 33 years, 24 of those at San Luis Obispo High School, and 22 of those 24 as chair of the resource department. Patsy was also the teacher of the year at our school in 2010 and 11. The truth is that Patsy has been a fierce advocate for her students and her colleagues, working at all levels to make sure that resource teachers and special needs students get the support they need and deserve. This includes spending countless hours working on tailoring student and staff schedules to guarantee the best possible teaching and learning opportunities for everyone, assisting with standardized testing to make sure students are tested in the right environment and with the accommodations and modifications they need, and relentlessly, and I'll repeat, relentlessly, overseeing her department budget to make sure teachers have the materials and supplies they need to be successful. Patsy is no shrinking violet. If you work with her, bring your A game, because you are engaging with a consummate professional who knows what she wants and doesn't hesitate to ask for it. And that way, she has been the perfect voice for a staff, student, and parent constituency that might be overwhelmed by the size and complexity of a comprehensive high school. Trust me, you want Patsy on your side. Her colleague shared these thoughts. How does this woman manage to do all these things she does and with such grace? Teacher, mentor, case manager, master of IEPs, caretaker, baker, floral arranger, and party planner. And trust me, she's great at that. She is our champion and inspiration. We will miss her greatly, but we wish her the best for this new adventure called retirement. Thank you, Patsy, for all your support and dedication over the years. You are the best. Sure. I'm going to violate the protocol. Shout out to my esteemed retiring colleague, Mrs. Bonnie Parsons.
I know. You can see we planned this together. Looking at our colors. I have a great honor. I'm Joyce Center Principal at Sinsheimer Elementary School, and I have a great honor this evening to recognize Dana Fiore, who's retiring for us. And I thought a lot about what I wanted to say for Dana this evening. And a favorite saying of mine is that teachers are flowers in the garden of life. And I want you to think about that for a minute. Teachers are flowers. Students love and care. The rose, every year, 1,200,000,000 roses are sent in our country to people to make them feel good. And like that, that made me think of Dana, the 200 million compliments, love, hugs, care, kisses, emails, phone calls, pats on the back, and love that she has done for all of her students each and every year. She is just an outstanding teacher. Something that roses go with, music. And Dana is very musical. If you go by her classroom at any time, you will see her playing her guitar, ballads with her second graders in both Spanish and English, which is fabulous. And just bringing joy to the lives of her children. In addition, you know, when I think of roses, they're an international flower. She loves children and spent a year in Spain really beefing up on her Spanish so that she could really, really connect. And when she talks, she doesn't talk like an English-speaking Spanish person. She actually is completely fluent, bilingual, reading, writing, everything in Spanish. She's amazing, native speaker. And I think like any rose, life has thrown her a few thorns along the way. Dana lost her husband, John, this year after a 5-year battle of, you know, leukemia. But she learned a lot about life through that, and we've talked about that. And one of the things that she's learned is that life is short, And that's one of the reasons she's choosing to retire right now. And I want to wish Dana the best and say, you know, Dana, life is short, so make sure you smell the roses along the way. Love you. It already is memorable. It is a pleasure, school board members, to honor Loretta Axberg, a 17-year employee for the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. Loretta has been a beloved paraeducator in our less intensive special day class at C.L. Smith for the past 12 years, working directly with special day class teacher Greg Kramer. Before that, she was a paraeducator at Del Mar School, working with special day class teacher Greg Kramer. Mr. Kramer, as they tell it, stole her from Del Mar, brought her to C.L. Smith, and I want to thank him personally for doing that tonight. What a gift Loretta Axberg has been for C.L. Smith. But I must tell you, when I first met her, I wasn't so sure. I thought she was kind of a pushover. Look at her, so soft-spoken, so kind. But then I found out that there is a persistent, unflappable taskmaster under that sweet exterior. Students always know that Mrs. Axberg cares for them, but they also know she also invites students out for a special annual trip each December to the Performing Arts Center. She would make sure that each girl had a special dress to wear for the event. One year, a hairstylist even showed up to make sure everybody was looking good. She fed the children dinner with fine china. She then drove them to the pack for a lovely evening with the Nutcracker. This was such a coveted event. It's now become a yearly tradition at C.L. Smith, thanks to Loretta. Loretta is an exemplary person, an amazing paraeducator, a dear friend, and we are already missing her at C.L. Smith. Thank you, Loretta.
Try this again. Okay, I'm Denise Gallo, Transportation Supervisor, and I'd like to start off by saying how honored I am here to be tonight to pay tribute to Nikki Wright, who served 22 years of service as a bus driver for San Luis Coastal. When I thought about what I'd say tonight, the word that often came to my mind was pride, and I know Nikki's very proud of her service as a bus driver for our district, as am I. And dedication and commitment are also words that describe Nikki's service to our district. I consider the bus drivers the unsung heroes. Their job is not a job where they can decide to leave their work for tomorrow should they be having a bad day. Their job must be done to completion each and every day, and there is no room for error. It takes a very special person to do this job. Up at 4:30 every morning and many nights out until 10 o'clock, moving our students to various events and 6 days a week. Nikki's one of the best examples of what it takes to be a successful bus driver. When I arrived here in 1996, I was completely unfamiliar with the San Luis Obispo area and very naive in the many ways when it came to learning how business is conducted at the district. From day one, Nikki made sure I knew I could count on her for just about anything. Nikki has been an anchor in our transportation department from day one, and she was always one of the first drivers on duty every day just to make sure everything flowed smoothly and to be available should anyone need any assistance. Nikki was a mentor to all the new drivers, there to cheer them on as they started their journey as a bus driver. She always had something cheerful to say, even if it was before 7 o'clock in the morning. We always wondered how someone could smile that broadly just after daybreak. See her smile? Her answer would be something like, you might as well smile because you're here anyway and there's no point in bringing anybody else down by complaining. That is a remark I always associate with Nikki, and far from bringing anybody down, Nikki has held up the transportation department and kept the team on a steady course for many years. She may have been smiling all the time, but she was always able to laugh at herself. Nikki has also provided the rest of us with some funny moments. Looking back over Nikki's career here at the district, we all have stories about special times with her. Over the 15 years we've been together, we've shared many ups and downs, including many life-altering events, and Nikki knows of what I speak. Her strength as a woman has always been admirable and something I grew to count on. Much we admire your dedication to your work, and it is people like you who come into work with a smile, make our students happy, and understand that we always have to keep reaching and improving our service to them. It's impossible to measure what Nikki has meant to San Luis Coastal all these years, and I know I speak for everyone when I say this is a bittersweet moment, saying goodbye to a friend and co-worker who has meant so much to me. But we are all happy that Nikki will finally have time to kick back, sleep in till 6 a.m., and pursue new dreams and just enjoy life. Good luck to you, and thank you again for the many years of service to our students. You're welcome.
Good evening. I'm Kurt Collins, principal, Hawthorne Elementary School, and I'm here tonight to honor Carol Cachese, who has been a teacher at Hawthorne for 23 years and a teacher for 35 years, if you count all of her other experiences in other districts. One of the things that I just wanted to share about Carol is that she has been, over the years, one of the most soft-spoken, even-tempered people I've ever known. Even when you walk into her classroom, everyone talks like this. And when I walk in to get someone, I feel like, hey, is Mike here today? And it's just everyone just respects her and loves her and honors her. Her students, we did a video at our school recently. So many kids said she's the best teacher I've ever had. We just love her. Even kids who didn't have her said they wish that they had her because she's just so great. A few years ago, I have to tell you this story, we started a homework club at Hawthorne Elementary. We had like 100 kids in our library every day. Carol said, you know what? There's just too many kids in here. I'm going to start one just for the upper grades. And so every day for Tuesday through Friday, she would take kids into, or excuse me, Monday through Thursday, she would take kids into her classroom, and she would hold her own homework club for kids in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. And she just was relentless with that, helping kids so that when they went home, their homework was finished and they could have family quality time with their parents rather than arguing or fussing over homework. And I just thought it was just wonderful that she's been doing that. Another thing, she's always there early. She's just an early bird. And so a lot of times I'll have a meeting or something and I've forgotten to ask somebody the day before to cover my duties because I have early morning recess duty. And Carol is always the one to say yes. She's never said no. And the staff just loves her. She always opens her home with her husband, Chris, to staff parties, any type of receptions or honors that are going on. She'll say, hey, just come to my house. That's great. She's always helpful in planning all of our assemblies. She does all of our STAR testing and other principles. You know how that is. She takes it over. In fact, she said even after she's retired, she's going to come back to Hawthorne and can you help with our STAR testing. So you can't beat that. But anyway, just in closing, I would just like to say, you know, this year she was honored by CTA for
the school system. And 36 of those years have been with San Luis Coastal. And of those 36, 34 of them have been out in Los Osos between Sunnyside and Baywood Elementary School teaching primary grades. Cheryl's passionate about teaching kids to read and to write. She became a reading recovery teacher and works well with those students. And I don't know how many kids, if we could count how many kids, went through Cheryl's program and are now voracious readers. And she also was devoted to making math meaningful to young kiddos, too. Cheryl's very musical and artistic. You should see her paintings or listen to her sing. She's awesome. And she brings those wonderful talents into the classroom to make learning interesting and meaningful and fun for the students. And now, after 38 years, Cheryl is trading in her chalk for a painter's brush and her chalkboard for a painter's palette so that she can go do what she loves and does so well, and that's create beauty. Congratulations, Cheryl Dove.
Hi, I'm Sue Thorson with Food Services, and it's my honor tonight to recognize the 25 years of wonderful service that Sherry Butler has provided to the school district. I first met Sherry when she was at Hawthorne Elementary School. She was working a split shift. She'd come in the morning and prepare and serve breakfast, and then she'd go home and come back and prepare and serve lunch for the students. At that time, Hawthorne did not have a kitchen. There was an oven and a milk cooler in the multipurpose room, and in a little alcove was a sink and refrigerator. The first thing that struck me about Sherry is how deeply she cares about everything she does, about her work, and about all the children that she serves. Later, Sherry transferred into our central kitchen at Laguna Middle School and took over the supervision of the salad sandwich department, and she brought that caring right with her. She always made sure that everybody was pleased with the salads and sandwiches, and if something happened, she bent over backwards to make everything right. In 1994, she promoted to food service delivery driver. Now she comes into the kitchen each morning and helps with our food production. And then she goes and loads a truck and takes all the lunches out to all the different schools on her route. Then she ends up at a school where she serves lunch. At this point, it's Morro Bay High School, where she helps. And then she makes the return trip, stopping back at all the school cafeterias to pick up the empty racks and come back into the kitchen. She's probably worked at most of the schools in the district. She's been at Del Mar and Pacheco and Teach and Baywood and Sunnyside and, am I missing one? A lot of them. And it's been
Los Ranchos.
It's been a true pleasure to work with Sherry, and I truly appreciate all that she's done for us, and we're going to miss you.
Heart through the head. And Dr. L. Frank, in my estimation, in getting to know him this year, is that man. And I'm very sorry to see him go. Dr. L. Frank came to our district in 1976. I have to tell you this. I was thinking, calculating. I think I was the dodgeball champion in fourth grade that year. I want to say, I think I was, yes.
I had to do that, too.
Okay, did you? Okay. Terry was hired as an industrial arts teacher at Laguna Junior High, and he also ran the ASB there and served as a counselor as well, part-time. He became the dean of San Luis Obispo High School for the next 10 years, and then he went to Los Osos Middle School, where he spent the rest of his career and finally ended his career as principal, and rightfully so. What I've learned about Terry L. Frank is he leads with the heart. He's concerned about social justice. He measures his success in life by his contribution to others. He and I, along with Rick Robinette, were meeting this morning at 7 a.m. to talk about ways and a program in which he could meet the needs of his struggling learners next year. And he wanted to work through a programmatic idea that he had worked through with his staff that he thought had merit, and it did. We spent about an hour working through that concept, and this is a man who's retiring in only a few short weeks. So it speaks to his character, it speaks to his true interests, and in my view, Dr. L. Frank has done a great service to San Luis Coastal, and we're going to sorely miss him.
Could I have Mr. Will Jones please come on up? I take great pride in speaking on behalf of Mr. Jones as he makes his way into retirement. They say in public education, the toughest job is the high school principalship. And it's the toughest job for many reasons. Most notably, the complexity of schools and the complexity of the high school experience. There's so many factors. And since coming to San Luis Coastal, what I've learned about Mr. Jones is that he has a gentle spirit. He has led a career of distinction. Last Friday, the AXA, Association of California School Administrators, acknowledged him for his Lifetime Achievement Award. To me, Mr. Jones has left behind a legacy of honor, trust, and numerous student-centered traditions that I've just begun to learn about. Mr. Jones was hired in 1986 to teach English at Laguna Junior High. Los Osos Middle School. The new guy. He moved. Mr. Jones has been here.
Good evening, Jim Skoulis, Monarch Grove Principal, and I'm here tonight to present to you Mary McConnell. As you can see, here is a woman who is far too young to retire. Mary is a teaching pro of over 30 years, which has included teaching stints in Guam, Atascadero, and Templeton. And in San Luis Coastal, she's worked at Pacheco, Baywood, Sunnyside, and Monarch Grove schools. Her classrooms are well known as a hub of incredible amounts of activity and hands-on learning, and she promotes responsibility and independent reading in her students, and she has cataloged and documented thousands of books in her own classroom, tagged them all for accelerated reader, and literally her second graders read hundreds of thousands of words a year, all of them do. They have no choice. Mary's husband, Bill, also is a retired teacher, and the two of them plan on stocking their wine cellar, staying up late on weeknights, and watching movies, riding around the countryside on their Harley, and enjoying life and filling it up with something other than teaching. Thank you very much, Mary, for your years of dedication to the students, and enjoy your well-deserved retirement.
Now, did I miss anybody that needs to come up and do a presentation? All right. Good. I would also like to acknowledge there were some people who are retiring this year or have retired over the course of the school year that are not here tonight, and I think it's just important that we acknowledge them and their great work. Barbara Bradley from San Luis Obispo High School, Judy Copeland from Laguna Middle School, Betty Dominighini from Del Mar Elementary, Rosemary Flamian from our adult PathPoint program, Nancy Grant, San Luis Obispo High School, Dana Hartwell from Los Ranchos Elementary, Debbie Laster from San Luis Obispo High, Neil Lyman, who's worked in our Buildings, Grounds, and Transportation Department, Assistant Superintendent and my mentor, Mary Matakovich, Ilana Seaton, Bishop's Peak Elementary, and Patty Zino from Los Osos Middle School. Can we acknowledge them all, too? Okay.
We will now take a short break to honor the retirees. There is cake in the back, so please feel free to step up and congratulate everyone. The board will take a short recess. We'll next move on to correspondence. And the board did receive quite a bit of correspondence. I'm going to read from our board agenda who sent us letters. And then we also received a number of notes today from people who submitted them at the meeting. And so I'll let everybody know who those things were, too. We received letters from Pathpoint clients Gregory, no last name given, Ruben, no last name given, Crystal Halterman, David Kapitsky, Sammy Patino, in support of retaining teacher Carla Von Zupp. I hope I pronounced that right. Additional letters received after the agenda publication in support of retaining teacher Carla Von Zupp were from Jeanette De La Garza, Joshua Miller, Shirley Parker, and Sammy Patino. In addition, we received correspondence this evening from Nancy Norwood, supporting adults with disabilities, Tracy Booker, also supporting the adults with disabilities, Jeanette De La Garza, Joshua Miller, Sammy Patino, Mrs. Shirley Parker, a number of people who signed from Casa De Vida, Noreen O'Hare, Lucinda Nichols, Carol Koch, Daniel Kingma, Monique Fleming, Shirley Bao, Jessica Voltero, and then we received written comments from Don Adias. Thank you very much, each and every one of you, for sending us comments. The board will now go on to public comment. We allow each person 3 minutes to speak, a maximum of 3 minutes, and because we have quite a few people who'd like to speak, I'm going to ask that you keep it to 3 minutes. At 3 minutes, the buzzer's going to go off, and I'm going to ask you to wrap your comments up. One thing we would appreciate is, because we know that a lot of you are here to support the Adults with Disabilities program, the first thing I think I'd like to do is, if you're here to support that group, if you just raise your hand and show us who you are. Great. And I know there's a group of students from San Luis Obispo High School, I believe, who are here. If you could show us. Thank you very much, and thank you for coming. Thank you for coming and witnessing the school board and seeing democracy at a community level firsthand, and we really appreciate that. In the past meetings, what I've asked is that as you're listening to comments, to show the school board that you understand what people are saying and that you support what they're saying, we ask when you hear things that you agree with that you raise your hands, and we'll take a look at that because we do want to know what people think. Mr. Angel will call the names of people who are going to be able to speak, who have requested time to speak, and he'll call the first name, and then he'll say who's going to be speaking after that. So when you hear your name, if what I would call on the on-deck circle, if you could just come up and be ready to speak, please. After 20 minutes, which is the time that is agendized for this, we'll see how many people are left, and then I'll bring it back to the board to see if the board has interest, if there are any other people who we would like to have speak. You ready, Mr. Angel?
I have 10 comments from adults with disabilities and one on the two-week spring break, so I'm going to start there.
Okay, if you'd like to do that.
Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
Spring break, which causes school to let out a week or later. But after realizing an item on tonight's agenda included the possible termination of the adult school that served the disabled, I figured that was more important than my original objective. When a program is terminated, funding is likely the culprit. One solution is to have everybody take a small hit in their salary so important school programs can continue. I believe this program that serves the disabled is an important school program. But before I'm burned at the stake for even suggesting people take a cut in pay, I've offered to take a significant cut in pay in the past when it looked like fellow employees of mine might be laid off. If the shared sacrifice isn't something that people can stomach, then find another way to keep this important program. Thank you.
Mr. Sims, followed by Aileen Graham.
Dr. Prentner wrote an article that San Luis Obispo had a win-win situation. as far as a business and education model of the Adult with Disabilities program, calling it second to none, calling it highly evolved, a win-win with the partnership with programs such as Pathpoint, Options, the SEN, Lewis High programs, a win-win with revenue with hard times. Also, he said this quality was second to none to San Luis Obispo. Student achievement with regards to K through 12 can be achieved through volunteerism, through the hard work of teachers and our bringing about our community. The teachers that we have in as our San Luis our adult with disabilities program, they inspire us. They give us a peer support through our different classes, through our individuals. They also have started things like CORE with healthy relationships for individuals, race grants. Our advocacy program raised over $17,000 within the last 3 years to help with scholarships to Sacramento and other places. Again, for a solution for the achievement, or bringing up our K through third individuals, I offer that we do more things like getting involved, putting a face to these students that in these individual areas of need, making sure that we actually know who they are, so that we can offer a San Luis Obispo way of helping, and not cutting what is actually one of the prides of San Luis, what sets San Luis apart. So let's put a face to those individuals we need. Like my mom, she used to work for a literacy council program, and with that, it was volunteer work. What we're offering here is we have a 3% mandated revenue, and our reserve is like at 20%. I'm sure with volunteers and a small fraction of maybe the revenue that, well, what I was saying is it's probably the parents need help. So I can't help as much as I would like to in my son's preschool, but there are a lot of parents that do help. So with that being said, that if you maybe put in the face and letting us know how we can help those K through 12s, we'll do it a San Luis Obispo way, like bring up revenue for supplies and just, you know, we're talking about 5 teachers maybe or 10 teachers maybe. So we shouldn't cut one program and we can get the volunteers to help.
Thank you very much, sir.
Aline Graham and then Phil Gammons.
Hi, I'm Aline Graham and I'm the director of Pathpoint. As an agency that provides services to people with adults with disabilities and has the good fortune of working with many of the adult school teachers, I'm sure you can guess where my opinions and where my heart is, and I'm not going to bore you with that, I'm going to refrain from that because there's a lot of other people that want to speak. What I do want to do is thank you. I want to thank the board and San Luis Coastal for providing us with quality teachers to help mentor our own staff for these, 20-some years. I mean, they not only mentored staff, they mentored me. So I want to thank San Luis Coastal, and especially I want to thank the teachers themselves who have... as I said, not only been mentors, they've been sort of our North Star. They helped provide consistency to our programs that we wouldn't have been able to afford on our own, and to always show us what we could aspire for to be better. And I really appreciate them, and I appreciate all that we've been able to receive. I hope that... Well, I said I wouldn't go there, so I just want to say thank you.
Thank you very much.
Phil Gammons, followed by Mark Schaffer.
Good evening. I'm Phil Gammons. I moved here in 1972, and my kids and my grandkids are all San Luis Coastal kids. So I've been around. I've seen things. I'm a social worker. I got into social worker hoping I could do something for somebody, and I hit the jackpot. I worked with my 36 years after a master's degree with people that we currently call developmentally disabled. We've called them many things. If you want stories, I visited Porterville State Hospital my first time in 1966, and I can tell you about change. The program we're talking about here tonight, I'm not here angry or upset. I'm just here to suggest that you keep the legacy, keep it alive. It's beautiful. These people have come so far. I have had the privilege of being somebody that could be of help to people who need assistance in life, and it's a magical thing. I've worked, I understand some of you have taken the chance to visit some of these programs we're talking to, and they work with very difficult groups of people, and they do marvelous things, and if you visited, you saw some of that. I've seen it for a long time, and I trust these people. They are mentors. They are leaders, trainers. People have come so far with them. And when I said I worked with people with disabilities, we call them various things. They are people first, and we all need to remember that. And we're in a position where we can be helpful to them and keep the legacy going. And I know there's a chunk of money involved, but it is a bargain, and we ought to keep the legacy. When I moved here in 72, this district was already doing adult ed with our folks, so it's at least a 40-year legacy that we're talking about, and I think we ought to continue it, and I hope you give it the strongest consideration you can. Thank you for your
time. Thank you, Mr. Gammons. Good evening.
Shuffer, followed by Naomi Blakely.
Good evening. My name is Mark Schaefer. I'm the executive director of United Cerebral Palsy. And I'm here tonight because 30 years ago, I was a teacher at Casa de Vida with this adult education program. And this program is so worth it because the teachers work with a staff of from 5 to 8 aides that are with them that are funded by another organization. But without their leadership, they wouldn't have the drive. In Casa de Vida, when I was there, there were 99 people living there 30 years ago. 70% of those people are living in the community right now. They've gone from a home where everything was taken care of to being self-sufficient. In that 30 years, we've gone from make-believe work in a classroom to getting adults where they're working at Burger King. They're getting real jobs. This has been led by adult ed teachers through this program. And the program is covering the cost of the teachers. There's a whole infrastructure that exists that is leading adults with disabilities into being productive citizens within our community. Now, we have kids with disabilities. We've got more now than we ever had. This group, this adult ed folks, these teachers are leading the way so that when our current kids that are within our system right now become adults, that they're getting real jobs, they're getting minimum wage, that they're getting out there. This group is out there developing that and developing that infrastructure, and they've been doing it for over 30 years. So we realize we have a lot of new problems that we need, or challenges that we have for kids now, that we need to help kids learn English and all that. We realize that. But to kill this program, I think, it is just not a good idea. You may need to cut the funding back, and at some point we may be able to find some more funding to expand it, but the leadership and the contribution to our community to help adults with disability be part of our community has really been led by this program for the last 30 years. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schaefer.
Naomi Blakely, followed by Nancy Norwood.
Statement, the one that follows the quote, you get, well, I must share the difficult truth. We're not called to serve adults in our organization. Rather, our core mission is to serve students pre-K through 12. The state of California has effectively made that statement through their funding apportionments and regulations. Well, with all due respect, that's not a fact. It's an opinion. I implore you, the board, not to waver from our mission and cast off our adults with disabilities, comforted by the fact they've still got someplace to go during the day. It's not about location. It's about quality and our commitment. The facts with regard to adult ed for these students are these. The program has been funded since the 70s through adult ed, which has more than paid its own way. In fact, it was perceived as a cash cow for a long while. When categorical funding was made flexible by the legislature, the general fund swept the funds generated and managed by adult school into one pot, now available to all of district students. Relatively speaking, the cost of the adult ed teachers is small, especially given the value and benefit they represent to our students. There is sufficient money in the coffers to achieve the initiatives for student success that you're honing to perfection and continue with adults in the disabilities program funding, because we need to continue to educate these students so they can become self-sufficient. That's in the mission statement. Rabbi Hillel gave us this thought: if I'm not for myself, who will be for me? If I'm not for others, what am I? And if not now, when? Now is the time for the board to make the commitment to continue to meet the mission statement as written and not terminate the program because it no longer brings in money. It's delusional to believe that the programs will continue to maintain the same quality without our adult ed teachers. Our students who were important enough to support for decades stand to lose their backbone, the quality that our adult ed teachers represent. Partnerships with local vendors are splendid, but their existence does not absolve us. We, who are in the business of providing quality education, have our responsibility to do just that. That's like saying we should cut our athletic programs because they can be picked up by the city's rec departments and hope that Friends of Music can pick up our music programs to save money. We're the educators. Education's what we're best at providing. We're skilled, efficient, and compassionate individuals. I challenge you, the board, to figure out a way to make your support for all of our students a reality. Partner with Voc Rehab, maybe a minimal amount of funding. This is just another challenge of the many challenges you face. Take this challenge and make it an opportunity, one which serves all of the district students, the citizens of our community. We teach our students that integrity means doing the right thing, even when no one's looking, because it's the right thing to do. Continuing the commitment to adults with disabilities is the right thing to do.
Thank you.
Nancy Norwood, followed by Bridget Reddy.
Kim, could you maybe adjust the microphone down for her, please?
My name is Nancy Norwood, and I'm well aware of the dilemma you face as you consider whether you should continue funding for the adult education for developmentally disabled adults. I began as one of the adult education teachers providing program for developmentally disabled adults at Cummings, and I'm certain that this is requiring a considerable investment of school district resources. You're doing the best you can so that these children will have wonderful and productive adult lives. Many of them will be equipped to follow the road to a productive livelihood. Others will need support as they acquire and perform particular job skills. And others will need the supportive environment which the programs utilizing your adult education teachers are providing. These are good programs, but they're fine programs whose quality is maintained because of the stability, continuity, and expertise provided by the adult education teachers. Without their continued leadership, based on their professional education and certification, the students in these programs whom you have educated in their young years will not have the quality of life as adults that you're hoping for them. I implore you, I ask you, to consider that continuing to fund these adult education teachers is really simply affirmation of your commitment to a productive life for your students with developmental disabilities.
Thank you, Mrs. Norwood.
Bridget Reddy, followed by Liz Boyd. Liz will be assisted by Gay Donovan.
Hello, I'm Bridget Reddy. I've taught 30 years, 25 of which have been here in San Luis Coastal. I currently teach fifth grade at Bishop's Peak. If we are truly a caring and civilized organization here at San Luis Coastal, we must not cut services for our disabled adult population. Clearly, they are the least likely to properly defend themselves from this action and most likely to suffer the greatest from this threatened, perceived threat. We must honor those who have developmental disabilities by providing them with opportunities for friendship, stimulation, and work. By cutting services to the very neediest of our population, we contradict our core mission to help those in this community. As a district, we have the opportunity to make a difference. Maybe not in test scores, but in a humanitarian light as well. By serving disabled adults, we exercise the opportunity to further educate the rest of our community and establish that everyone has a gift to share with the world. Let us set an example, make a stand, and truly be civilized members of a community, a society, and a great school district. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Reddy.
Liz Boyd, followed by Gay Donovan.
Okay. My name is Liz Boyd. Dear Dr. And I have a letter for you. Dear Dr. Prater and school board members, I'm a student of Gay Donovan.
Always tried to find new ways to include me. She has helped me to run the paper shredder and keep my attention on my work rather than being distracted by others. I have known Gay for over 25 years, since meeting her in the early 80s at Casa de Vida. She and the other adult ed teachers can always be trusted for their sincere understanding and support in matters of advocacy. They make me feel truly cared for and have steered me correctly through many problems over the years. And to see them leave will leave a deep hole in my life. These past 30 years have seen many advances in our rights as individuals. We need the clear voices, minds, and compassion of people such as Gay more than ever, or we may all lose what we have gained. Please find it in your means to keep Gay and her fellow teachers in their positions as our trusted teachers. Sincerely, Liz Boyd.
Now, I was going to say, it's been 20 minutes. How many more speakers do we have, Phil?
One, two, four.
Does the board have an interest in letting and continuing the public comment? Okay,
yes.
We'll go ahead and we'll end public comment after the last person that we have who's given us a yellow form.
Thank you. And I do just like to share a few more comments about Liz and to thank her. Dear Dr. Prater and school board members, Liz is a shining example of a model student in our Adults with Disabilities program. She has been a part of our program in various settings for about the past 30 years. Liz was part of the original group of students when People First, which advocates for the rights of individuals with disabilities, was started by an Adults with Disabilities teacher about 25 years ago. People First has been guided by teachers ever since. Liz has traveled to supported life conferences as a People First representative many times and has received the Mary Wilson Award for advocacy. At work, Liz has a great work ethic and is a caring friend and excellent role model for her fellow coworkers. Liz lives in a group home in Los Osos and enjoys community outings, which she arranges by phone to go to church, visit friends, and attend People First meetings. Liz always strives to learn, do her best, and be as independent as possible. Liz, on behalf of all the teachers, I want to thank you for supporting us today, for your kind words of appreciation, for your exceptional letter, and for doing such an outstanding job of representing yourself and your fellow students. Thank you, Liz.
Thank you very much.
David Miller, followed by Brian Miller. David Perez, I'm sorry, followed by Brian Miller.
I'm going to read this on behalf of a sister, Mary Loomis. She's the sister of a disabled man with Down syndrome. His name is Mike Waters, and he is precious beyond words. Our mother was 40 years old at the time of his birth. We knew nothing about this form of retardation. My parents were sent to San Francisco some other way. Thank you for your time. And signed by Bobby Loomis.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Miller, followed by Anna Mullen, who's our last speaker who requested to speak.
Oh, good. I was going to check to see if she was on there. Board, I understand how incredibly difficult this decision is for you. I have read that it is a heart-wrenching decision for our superintendent, but I ask you, and I have the mission statement up on the overscreen so everybody can read, but I ask all of you for 1 second. I have not heard or read from you that you feel that these students, Liz Boyd, Raymond Castro, and others out there, and these six teachers are not your responsibility. I have not heard that from you. I have heard that from Dr. Prater. So I want you to think just for 1 second, is that true? Do you represent that sense that these students and these teachers are not your responsibility as a school district? I know you can't reply to me. Yes, I understand.
I have to speak loud, but I'm a teacher. I'm good. This is written. Naomi pointed this out to us earlier. Our work is to educate students. This does not.
I don't need it, but I'll take it. Thank you. Oh, it records. Gotcha. TV. You can tell me that. Okay. Educate students. It doesn't make a distinction here in your mission statement whether these students are adult or whether these students are amongst you in the first row. You serve these students in the first row, too. You serve those students in the back as well. It doesn't make that distinction in your mission statement. So already we're in conflict here, all of us, with a mission statement that says this and actions that seem to contradict the mission statement. So we need to somehow come together and either change this mission statement or go forth and keep this program with their teachers and their students. The other thing I see here is it says the district guarantees. That's a big word, but it's up there. Somebody wrote this. Okay? I didn't. Okay? To provide the highest quality programs, services which will give all individuals, again, this is individuals, this does not say K-12 here, the opportunity to realize their full intellectual, physical, creative, and emotional and social potential. So one statement I make here is that this is what we all go by, the community and everybody else. And it is up there, and you have adopted it, and you live by it. We live by it. And you can't be living by this statement if you don't keep this program. There's no middle ground.
Thank you very much, Mr. Miller.
I'm not done. And finally, and uncomfortably so, I really wished that I could feel good. Oh, is my 3 minutes up?
Your 3 minutes is up. So thank you very much.
Special needs students is not fair to the students. It is important that these students have people to teach them that are trained to do so. Taking away teachers who have been specially trained, taking away teachers would be taking away opportunities from them. I have teachers who have been specially trained to teach me algebra and English, and special needs students deserve to have teachers that are trained to help them too, even if they are adults. The second reason is that we don't think that it is fair to lay off 6 teachers, especially in such tough economic times. These teachers have dedicated their careers to helping others, and we should show our appreciation for them by not firing them. These teachers are still very important to the lives of many special needs students in this county. Thank you for your consideration.
And I want to thank you very much. Thank you. And I'd like to acknowledge everybody who spoke. The board always appreciates public comment. I'd especially like to thank you, Anna, for coming up and speaking as a student. That's not something that we hear. We don't hear from our students very often, and we think it's very important. And we would invite, actually, any of you at any time to come and address us on any issue that's before the board. The board will now go forward into the superintendent's updates. Dr. Prater.
First item up is the status of the state budget. And while there have been no significant moves within the state budget, what we do have is a little bit of movement on the part of the legislature in looking at some of the funding issues attached for schools. Yesterday, a bill by Brownlee of Santa Monica was passed through committee and out of assembly that restructured much of the funding for schools that's based upon categorical programs and special interests. They're going to fold it into an ADA kind of model, and if the bill is successful as it's currently written, it'll have a profound effect upon basic aid districts in that we will lose our categorical funding. It does not make allowance, as it's currently written, to pass through funding for class size reduction or SIP or EIA-type programs, and those programs would be folded into a district's revenue limit and be paid on the basis of ADA. So it is a big hit. It's $3 to $6 million, depending on what programs are folded into what type of category. So we have to watch that one very carefully. In terms of the state budget, the progress is becoming an item of momentum, and it's pretty well considered that, and I say this carefully, that there will be a budget on June 15th. The primary reason is the legislators will lose their salaries for every day that the budget isn't passed after June 15th. It's not that their salaries will be withheld, deferred, postponed, or put aside.
And I know that various education groups in California are encouraging that legislators be contacted to extend the tax extensions for at least one more year. And I believe all the major Ed Coalition members are supporting that initiative, the CSBA, PTA, CTA, AXA. Those folks are doing that.
It's unanimous and universal attempt to get the citizens of the state to attach a letter to their congressman and assembly member. For us, it would be Cacho and Blakesley. And if we could get out some communiques to them, it's not going to hurt anything.
Right. Yeah, that's what's being asked, I think, is to contact legislators, especially Republican legislators, directly and tell the story. Mr. Angel.
I don't have Cacho's number with me, but Mr. Blakesley, Senator Blakesley, is 549-3381. 549-3381.
Tonight, I'd like to share out the recommendations of our District English Language Advisory Council. And I'd like to acknowledge Mr. Rivera, who is our DLAC president, and Mr. Mora, who is the DLAC vice president. And they represent the leadership of our English Language Advisory Council parents and families from each of our sites. And we meet every month. And I've been fortunate to attend these meetings, and I've really appreciated the leadership of Mrs. Rita Delkiskamp as she runs these programs. So as part of the end of the year follow-up, the DLAC has requested that I share their recommendations with you. And first of all, the there are approximately 1,600 English language learners in our district. That is a growing number. And the recommendations from the District English Language Advisory Council is, first of all, to continue ongoing support for our English language development programs, intervention support sections, and support materials for students and staff. They also requested that transportation to and from school is a significant need and priority, as well as transportation for summer school intervention programs. We are currently meeting those needs, but it is a topic of discussion every single DLAC meeting. Additionally, they would like to acknowledge the need for bilingual and bicultural support staff in the offices of our schools. They're finding it increasingly difficult to communicate with our offices and to gather support for whatever needs they might have. This is an increasing frustration. They're also interested in ensuring better access for our English language parent community in order to need of all the way from healthcare to mental health services to figuring out how to communicate with their child's teacher. And so these things are becoming and emerging as central themes in our DLAC meetings and causing significant disconnect between our families, especially our English language learner families and our schools. So that needs to be a priority as we move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Could you possibly just send that to us in the Friday packet as well so that we have that written down? Great, thank you very much. Let's move on to item number one, report of the Santa Lucia Regional Occupational Program Board meeting. Mr. Buckman.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. It's my great pleasure to congratulate Morabay High School teacher Liz Moore. Liz was recently named the County ROP Teacher of the Year, and the next week found out that she was also recognized by the state organization California Art Education Association as the exemplary program for 2011. At the meeting in Liz, are you here? I didn't see. Sorry. I was glad you were going to come. Also at the meeting in Shandon last month, we learned that the San Luis Coastal Unified has the second most robust program in the county, offering 28 classes. We approved the first online ROP class in the state. It is the healthcare centers class, which will ultimately prepare our students for careers in health to the point that they can take a diverse number of certification classes that will allow them to go directly into doctor's offices, hospitals, and other employment opportunities. While there is much online learning, the students will also get extensive hands-on experience at medical facilities in and around our county, including riding and working with ambulances. We can have up to 8 spots for our juniors and seniors in this program, and the class actually takes 180 hours. San Luis Coastal offers the second largest ROP program in the county. ROP in this district offers 28 classes, including architecture and design, 9 computer classes, criminal justice, video production, and there are 5 ag classes and many other careers represented. ROP serves both the students who want to go directly into a career, but also those who will take their ROP experience and apply it to their college majors. Participation increased 66% in this district since last year. There's a demand for this type of classes that ROP is fulfilling.
Mr. Buckman, do you know how it works with this new healthcare, the online healthcare class?
I'll try.
Is it something that the students, can they avail themselves of the school computers to take advantage of the class? Does it require a home computer?
As far as I know, they can take it from any computer, and they can do it on their own time at their own speed.
So then my next question, I guess, would be maybe for Mr. Robinette. How will we make that class available to students? Do you have any idea yet?
It looks like Mrs. Delkenskamp is ready to answer. She'll probably do a better job than I will because it's a regional program. So
okay, thank you.
Right. Tonight, later, you'll see an item where our
board can approve this. Either they can use computers that they have at home, and if they don't, then we will have accommodations, whether they're school computers or whatever setting, so that nobody is, you know, left out of that opportunity for lack of a computer.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. By the way, I did, and although I'm doing this in sort of a tardy fashion, I wanted to thank Sue Thorson for baking the cake that we had this evening. I know Sue's not here anymore, but if somebody could pass the word on, that the Board of Education really appreciates the work that she did. Let's move on to item number two then. That's authorization for year-end transfers. Julie Lang.
Good evening. At the close of each school year, it's necessary to pass this resolution giving the district the authority to make the necessary transfers to close the books at year end. There's not really an opportunity for the board to approve the changes in the budget between the time you adopt the budget, which includes our estimated actuals, and the time we report our unaudited actuals to you. So we would recommend that the board passes this resolution giving us the authority to do the year end transfers required to close out the school year.
Any questions for Ms. Lang? Any comments from,
No, I don't have a question.
Is there any comments from the audience? Okay, seeing none, I'll take a motion for that.
Yeah, I'll move approval of resolution number 17-10-11, authorization for year-end transfers.
I'll second.
It's been moved by Mrs. Rogers, seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Any other comments from board members? Seeing none, Mrs. Holmes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Quisenberry? Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Angel?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Passes 6-0.
Okay. Julie, you're up again for item number three, utilizing flexibility authorized by SB X34 related to categorical program funding. This will be a public hearing.
Yes. Since this bill was passed in 2008-2009, the district is required every year to hold a public hearing to give the public an opportunity to comment on the proposed use of the Tier 3 flexible funds. Prior to this bill, these funds were all restricted for specific purposes. SB X34 allowed the flexibility to use these funds for any educational purpose. And this last March, SB 70 was passed, which extends the flexibility of these funds to 2014-15. The district has been maintaining these funds in separate accounts and plans on using them for the purposes for which they were originally intended, which support the general education of the district. And with that, we can open it for public comment.
We'll go ahead now and open the public hearing. This public hearing is now open. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing. Move on to item number four, utilizing flexibility authorized by SB X34 related to categorical program funding.
And this just gives the board an opportunity to discuss and approve the proposed uses of these flexible funds.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak to this item?
Categorical program funding.
We have a motion. Do we have a second? I'll second it. Is there any further discussion from board members? Mr. Quisenberry.
So this is just giving us the flexibility to use them however we see fit for the educational for the education of the students in our district. Is that correct?
That is correct. The flexibility is the board's to use in areas such as funding the initiatives or putting forth programs that enhance the opportunities for kids.
Thank you.
Mr. Angel.
My understanding, the adult program was with the Tier 3, but the adults with disabilities was more of a ADA revenue?
It was an ADA different from generated, the Tier 3? Yeah, the revenues from adults with disabilities were generated by the number of hours that the students were served, and it was not part of the fundamental adult ed funding that was passed through to Tier 3.
So what was the adult ed that was funded on Tier 3? An example, I guess. I know it's a tough question there.
It's a good question. It's been a while, but there was, Julie, The revenue limit calculation for adult ed was based on?
It was based on hours on certain programs that they don't collect fees for.
There was a number of hours that you could earn for certain programs.
GED.
You know, I'll look into...
Yeah, GED.
Greg and, mm-hmm.
I'll look into the classification. What are you pointing at?
Greg Happen.
Is he here?
I don't see him.
The expert.
Yes, give an answer.
Please. Mr. Happen, if you could, please.
The money in the Tier 3 funding is the money that when the state decided to go to the new formula and do tiered funding, they went back 1 year at the amount of revenue that adult schools generated that year before, and they subtracted 20% from that, and they gave school districts that lump sum dollar amount in Tier 3. There is no longer any ADA in any of our programs.
Greg, do you know about the adult ed component? Was that included in the amount that they calculated minus the 20%? The adults with disability component?
It was.
Okay.
It's all one, a single factor.
So these were programs such as adults with disabilities, the GED program, was our ESL program included in
everything
that, as well?
That we do, parent participation, diploma, ESL, adults with disabilities, older adults, all of those programs were, just as with every adult school in the state, they took that lump sum amount. They went back a year, which again hurt us because we were a growing program, and then they subtracted 20% off the top, and then they put that money, that stagnant dollar value, into a pot that they have carried forward.
So that has not grown since?
It has not.
And what year was that?
It was 07, 08 that they made that decision. They went back a year for the
06, 07.
For the base dollar amount, and then they subtracted from that.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Buckman?
Yes, just real quickly. So the dollar amount then that we've either...
With one nay from Mr. Buckman. Move on to item number 5, approval of additional new modified secondary course for 2011-2012. Mrs. Delkiskamp.
Thank you. We have four courses for your consideration this evening and hopefully approval so that we can move them forward. They're in your packet. The first one is the Pacheco Spanish Wheel. It's offered at Laguna, and we've had this course, but it's being modified in order to make the curriculum a little bit more rigorous, more in line, and preparing students to enter San Luis Obispo High School or Morro Bay at a level 4, and so it's a curriculum that's more of a level 3. And also has been developed in collaboration or consultation with the teachers at Pacheco. So it's a modification to an existing course. The next two courses, the English Learner English Language Arts Support class, is exactly that. We have found that it's difficult for our English learners in levels 3 and 4 to transition successfully into our mainstream English classes, and this is an effort to offer them support, to provide them with an English 9 curriculum and then a support class to help strengthen what it says there, their reading comprehension, critical higher order thinking skills, and writing skills. The one after that is Algebra 1 support, also intended to help our students who are taking our algebra classes, our ninth graders, by offering them another course that will help them to, well, give teachers the time to address maybe some of the areas of understanding that they're having difficulty with, but also to front load some of what will happen in the Algebra 1 class and help them to have more success that way. And then, of course, our last one is our new ROP healthcare careers course.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on item number 5? Yes, please.
Clarification. Is the course that you're suggesting for the algebra going to be applicable to the middle school level as well for algebra courses spoken or taught there?
All of our courses are adopted for our secondary schools. All of the principals at the secondary schools are able to provide input. And so if this course, if our middle schools elected to have a course like this and put it in place, they surely could.
Okay, so the fact that it says grade level 9, it could be adopted by 8th grade, is that your question?
We couldn't. I think that's a good observation. We could definitely adjust that if that was the interest. At this time, it's San Luis Obispo High School who's interested in implementing that, but it's definitely a change we could make.
And the understanding is that courses that are approved are not necessarily offered at any of the schools. Is that correct?
Right. Usually it's sometimes it's two schools or more that are wanting to offer the course, but if at least one school wants to offer the course, we present it, and then later on it's open to anybody else who wants to pick it up.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Quisenberry?
No, this is not currently offered at Morro Bay, or they haven't requested it for the next semester or the next year?
That's correct.
Okay.
Mrs. Rogers?
So, Mrs. Delkiskamp, am I understanding correctly that a ninth grade student would be taking algebra and then concurrently taking this course, the support course, which sort of would scaffold the algebra? It would require two teachers to work in very close in concert with one another?
I believe what they're trying to do is have the same teacher. I know for the English learner ELA support class, that is the plan. If they're also able to accomplish that for Algebra 1, that will be the plan. But if not, yes, the two teachers need to coordinate to make that happen if there are two.
I could have passed it as a freshman if I'd had that.
On the English and math, are those mandatory electives?
No, yeah. They're not.
So it's just by choice?
Yeah. Right. A strong recommendation, working with the students, working with the parents to show them that, yes, they are electives.
Okay. And is the Pacheco wheel open to students who are second language, Spanish is a second language at other schools as well?
Yes. Under the prerequisite, it says they can be a graduate from the dual immersion or advanced in fluency in English and Spanish.
And then thank you. And then I'd like to give some kudos to Mr. Buckman for the ROP Health. I was at an ROP meeting about a year ago that he was really pushing this idea, and Dr. Souza, Mr. Souza was like, yeah, that's a great idea, Mark. So here it is. It's finally being realized. And that's my recollection.
I just got to be careful. This actually came from an ROP teacher, and it worked its way up to the ROP board. So.
Champion the cause. Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. I don't know. Do we have a motion and a second on this one? I don't think so. Thank you. Could somebody make a motion, please? Mrs. Roger.
I'd like to move approval of additional new or modified secondary courses for 2011-2012.
Thanks, and I'd be proud to second that.
It's been moved by Mrs. Roger and seconded by Mr. Buckman for item number 5. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Moving on to item number 6, Mrs. Delkiskamp.
What we're asking for tonight is your approval for our ROP computer applications materials adoption. I'd say part of the reason why ROP class involvement enrollment is up because was of the smart move here to have our computer applications class, which all students are required to complete, come under the umbrella of ROP. It's a win-win for us. But, technology keeps evolving, and we have now Office 2010, and we need to update our materials if we're going to be able to prepare our students with the skills that they need and keep them up to date. And so we had a panel of teachers represented by both of our high schools, as well as Amelia Samoa sat on the committee with us, and I was there too, and Cheryl Hill, who always does the background work to get us there, our administrative assistant. And so the teachers and that committee have come up with this recommendation that you see in your item here. The reason why they selected this one, they felt that it had a very strong instructor's resource guide. The program components were much stronger than those of it. I imagine it will support our program for quite a while. We've had Microsoft Office 2003 for several years. We skipped 2007. Okay, we're going with 2010, which is very similar to 2007, and I can't predict the future of technology sure. and how it will evolve, but no, it won't be an annual cost at this point. I expect for several years we'll be able to use the software and the textbooks.
Thank you.
I need to go to the public. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak to this item? Okay, seeing none. Mr. Buckman? Anybody else? Okay, go ahead, Mr. Buckman, for sure.
I'd just like to move approval of item number 6, approval of instructional materials adoptions recommendation for the ROP computer applications.
I'll second it.
It's been moved by Mr. Buckman and seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Any further discussion from the board? Seeing none, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0.
Thank
you. Move on to item number 7, Mr. Robinette.
Thank you. Used to doing a lot of job description work with the Personnel Commission, but not so often with the school board. However, we have two certificated positions as part of our administrative restructuring plan at the district office, which is to change the director of student services to that of an executive director position and elevate a new position of deputy director of student services. We have the job descriptions attached for your perusal. In my experience with job descriptions, they often should have a couple readings, and so I'm kind of offering this as a first reading for the board, but certainly available for questions as opposed to just going through specifics of the job descriptions.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak to this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Does the board have any comments about these job descriptions? Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, I really appreciate Mr. Robinette's take on this. I would appreciate some more time working with these, and so I support the concept of bringing it back for a second read.
Mr. Angel?
I'm going to agree with Mark on bringing it back for a second reading. I spent a lot of time peppering the district with questions on budget, and I did not spend enough time peppering questions. Personally,
if it's appropriate, any feedback or suggestions or alterations you can give me tonight would be fine. But also, if you need to, separately send some, study it, send comments, I'd appreciate that also. And that way I can incorporate, even though I'd like to get the whole board's perspective, but I can incorporate those things that are important to you into a second reading. There's no real hurry on this one. We'll have people occupy the positions whether we have the full description or not, but we do want to have a pretty accurate description of their duties.
Right.
Okay. Mrs. Roger.
I posed this question to Mr. Miller, but I'll ask it again for the benefit of any other board members who were around and remember that we had authorized the employment of a MAW clerk mm-hmm. some years ago to handle the billings, Medi-Cal reimbursement billings from the state. And
coordinating MAW activities throughout the district, it'll be the job responsibility of the director in order to oversee that position and make sure it's done accurately and consistently and on time.
Thank you very much.
It's a substantial amount of money.
What, how much is our MA reimbursement annually?
It's probably $400,000 to $600,000.
$300,000.
I can't see that far.
Sold to the lady.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a lot of money.
So we were wise, in hindsight, now to hire someone and charge them with the responsibility.
In hindsight, in foresight, in all sight. We did
in
a
all
good
sides.
Thing.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Phil, did you have a comment?
No.
Okay. I would like, on the Executive Director of Student Services, on item number duties and responsibilities, number four, I'd like to see the word cooperative added to that piece of the job description.
Under duties and responsibilities.
Number four, on 7.2, provide liaison with other school districts and county SELPA agencies for special education purposes. I'd like to see the word cooperative inserted in there. Provide, I'm going to leave it to the administration, but I think we need to say something like provide liaison and cooperation, something like that.
Thank you.
You know, I'm not a person who does job descriptions very well. Well, I do them. I just don't write them. But on the Executive Director of Student Services, that's going to be initiative two. Is that?
Well,
we kind of made this with initiative two. Or okay. Oh, deputy directors for initiative
I think these
two.
Directors will be carrying through all of our initiatives.
Okay. So, all right.
Okay. Mr. Rogers.
But, Mr. Angel, what I think I suspect what you were driving at or what you're headed towards would be initiative number two, the circle of care, whatever it is, however it's phrased, that this... The deputy director would be responsible for expulsions and
right.
Truancy and SARB and the various other things that, you know, the safety nets that we're throwing around.
This is correct.
And then the executive director would oversee that person?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Any other feedback, Mr. Buckman? No? Okay. Sounds like you've gotten some feedback, so
we'll,
you'll bring
and we'll
this
bring
back.
It back for a second reading.
Okay. Let's move on to item number eight, final review of SMART goals to support initiatives for student success. Dr. Prater.
I think I'll go up here and just make it a little more formal, although the presentation is fairly simple tonight. At our last board meeting, we took the opportunity to go through our SMART goals. Those are specific, measurable, attainable, reasonable, timely goals. So the intent of this document is to give meaning and purpose to our work and the work of our individual sites. And I actually think its best fruition is going to be seen when you see the school plans for student achievement coming from each of our school sites. So my, I guess, admonition to you as the board is not to get too mired in the detail, although feel free to ask away if you're seeking more detail, because that's what we're here for, but to hold fast to what we are planning on accomplishing here. Without going through the entire document again, I would like to indicate a few of the more significant changes we have made over the last couple of weeks. I'll just kind of refer to the pages, but then be open to any other items the board wants to discuss. On page 8.3, which is initiative 1, we made sure that our intent to increase access to technology was not just exclusive to a particular subgroup. It kind of this action plan had to do with certain populations in our student body, but there's no reason to keep students from our libraries or access to technology if they don't fall into one of those subgroups. If you look on page 8.6, which is initiative 2, we included the idea of researching a welcoming curriculum or program for students that are new to the area and schools, and also included the exploration and expansion of the family resource model that we have piloted in Los Osos this year. On page 8.10, initiative 4, you will notice that we brought more specificity to our goal measurements and also made note to the fact that we will be adopting national Common Core standards. So we included that through a lot of places in the document, talking about Common Core standards in our district actions. And if you look all the way to page 824, and I know I'm just flipping through pages here, which is initiative 10, we fleshed this out a little bit more. It was a little, I think we needed a little more work there, and included an expansion of AVID strategies, an inclusion of analyzing our current career center models, and working on our local college articulation with Cuesta and Cal Poly. And throughout the entire document, you're going to see a heavier reflection and a heavier budget reallocation toward professional development. We heard that a lot at the last board meeting. And so, and including using and paying our own teachers as providers, we found that to be one of the best models as we go through comprehensive literacy is that whole trainer of trainer models with our own teachers. Other than that, I think you've had an opportunity to look at the scope, and staff is certainly available here to answer any specific questions you may have as you go through the document. I know you've looked through the document. Those items in black, when we're bolded, are places where we've made changes since the last iteration. And so it's here for your discussion and or adoption.
And I'm going to go to the public to see if there's any public comment on the proposed initiatives, the final review of the SMART goals. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Okay, seeing no one, I'm going to close the public portion of this and go to the board. Board members, who do we have any comments on the adoption of the SMART goals? Mr. Angel.
I'm just excited. Again, I'm very excited about the whole SMART goals and the initiatives. I was talking with a professor at Cal Poly who mentioned a grant.
I think it's going to be great for the students of the district.
Well, that credit really needs to go to the team that worked so hard on it, which wasn't me, and it wasn't Dr. Prater, I have to tell you. We all had our input, but Amelia Samoes, Jackie Kirk-Martinez, Amy Shields, Rita Delkiskamp, Julie Lang with the budget just did incredible work on this, and they deserve the credit.
Okay, other comments from board members? Well, I'm Mrs. Roger, did you have a comment? I'm sorry. I thought I heard you over there.
I guess I do. I mean, I too am excited about the SMART goals, and I don't want to be the one who brings negativity to the discussion, but I do have I want to reiterate that I'm still concerned about providing enough support to our special education hubs, which would be C.L. Smith and Baywood Elementary School. I see that we've added some clerical support and we're adding some administrative support, but because those are there's a lot of intensive work going on at those campuses, I need to say up front that I'm concerned that we may not have enough counseling support, speech pathology support, specialist support of whatever type. I mean, I'm not there, but they know what they need to allow those hubs to be truly successful. I'm willing to look at this and approve this, but I want to make sure that comment is on the record, that I'm going to be looking to be sure and talking to people at the sites to be sure that they're getting what they need to be successful.
Okay. And I actually am going to support what you say, Marilyn, because I too agree that we have support, additional support, but I do know that both Baywood and C.L. Smith have a heavy load with both the expectation for student achievement for our regular and our special education students as well. And I would like to hear an update on this, and I'm not sure how many months we'd be looking at, but I'd like to hear how they're doing. And if we're not supporting those schools and the school sites and the students effectively, then I think we need to be able to look at that and look at what kinds of things we can do more on it.
So that we can address their needs as if they arise or as they arise. Would you say, Chris?
Yes, that's exactly what I would support.
And I actually think that's a wise move. Determining the support needs of staff and students and parents in the model we have, it's always, we go after the best guess. So I recognize that we may have more issues to look at, but C.L. Smith and Baywood aren't alone. We also have some some rigorous programs at Laguna and Los Osos. Mm-hmm. We also have San Luis High and Morro Bay High that need consideration. In our CAT meeting, it was mentioned that we need to really examine support for some of our resource special needs teachers, specifically as they go through the day, providing them with enough prep time to tackle the...
Their concentrations, their...
That's right.
I'm calling them hubs, but I don't know. There must be a better word for it. But where we have a whole cluster...
It's probably a larger continuum of services at those schools. Hubs probably isn't the right word.
I don't
either.
Know. But like, me, hub just sort of meant like a concentration. I don't know. Is that a... Well, anyway, however we decide we want to... whatever its name, let's pay attention to it.
I will monitor it closely.
Thank you.
Thanks. And I think that one thing is, I do think that one of the functions of the SMART goals is to address the Tier 1, Tier 2, and hopefully Tier 3 response to intervention strategies. Mr. Quisenberry.
Yeah, I don't want to pick apart the document right now. A question more about evaluating, looking in the future and evaluating the effect of the various TOSAs, the teachers on special assignments. Have we given thought to how we would do that, and if we would look at the various sites and their assessment of how these people have assisted them, and I'm looking down the road to May and so forth. Has that been discussed in any detail, or is that something that's in the works?
Yeah, no, we haven't. The closest we've come to that conversation is in meeting with Rita and Amy and Jackie. My strong opinion is that our TOSAs need to be at the sites for the majority of the week, and they need to be seen, felt, and understood for what their intent is, which is to support learning and support the staff. So how that folds out, how that looks, is going to be part of our conversation this summer. And our intention is to make sure that we get the biggest bang for our buck with this, at the site level, touching the classroom floor as much as possible.
I think you raise a good point, though, as far as evaluating effectiveness. There probably is something we can do in terms of staff surveys or, you know, there's some proof in the results we get or don't get, I suppose, but also in just kind of seeing effectiveness. We know, for example, our commitment this year to having a part-time TOSA in early literacy, our sites are overwhelmingly saying, give us that person full-time, we need more. And so we would hope that we get those responses, or if we don't get those responses, we make the adjustments necessary to reallocate those resources. So I think it's a very good point.
Well, thank you. And I do want to echo what others have said as far as the how grateful we are for the work that's been done on this. So, yeah, extremely grateful. Thank you.
Mrs. Sheffer?
One of the things that I find very exciting about this is the fact that we have acknowledged our student population, that we have taken a hard look at things we haven't done well as in addition to things we've been more successful at, and also acknowledging that each how to use these resources instead of having a one-size-fits-all approach, which would be ever so much simpler, but acknowledging that that our needs are not simple and our sites are not simple and we're all part of a complex organization, I admire that a lot. I think the level of knowledge that we're working hard to attain and then reflect in the work of the goals, and the level of respect that we are giving to the sites, that the district and the administrators and the teachers, that everyone is giving to from the sites to the students, and the effort to learn the students are like at each site and what their needs are is going to serve this community and our students well. And that's why I'm excited about this, and I appreciate the work and the great effort that has gone into producing these goals. And let's start doing them.
Thank you. And Mrs. Rogers, do you have anything else?
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
One thing that I'd like to close with, Dr. Prater, you sent us this report card on district achievement. And frankly, reading this, it was discouraging to see where San Luis Coastal is 141st out of 146 of the largest school districts in California in terms of serving students of color and looking at the achievement gap, an overall score of a D, improvement in our low-income students in F, our students of color a D, the achievement gap between our Latino students and our non-Latino students at F, our performance of students of color and our low-income students a C. It's time that we moved forward and worked to do something about this. Referring back to this, the recommendations talk about several things. The first is establishing clear, ambitious goals in a variety of areas, including performance improvement, gaps in college readiness, and I think that these SMART goals address those things, using the data in this report to help benchmark performance and spur action. I think clearly the school board has been made aware of this. This is not information that I believe the community has been made well aware of yet, but certainly it is public information. I think that the SMART goals work toward achieving those things. It is my hope that when the next report card comes out, we will not be 141st out of 146, and we will not receive an overall score of a D, and that our students of color and our second language students will not have Fs in student achievement and gaps. You've opened the box. You know, we've taken the mirror and we've looked at ourselves, and we see some things that we need to change. And now that we've opened this box, we can't close it, and we need to move forward. And that's what I think we need to do for the next at least 5. Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0. Congratulations, Dr. Prater. Thanks. And now let's move on to the 2011-2012 proposed budget adoption. Mrs. Lang.
Thank you. I can tell somebody tall was here before me. Tonight we're presenting for your discussion and possible approval the 2011-12 budget and our estimated actuals for 2010-11. First, I'd like to apologize for the personnel reports that got in there. I'm so glad that you caught that, Mr. Unger, and that we were able to get those back and changed out. I'd also like to acknowledge the hard work of the staff and all the coordination and cooperation it takes to do this budget binder. And a lot of this can't be done until the very last minute, and they really work together and get it done. I'd like to talk to you about just a few of the more significant details of this. I'm not going to go over everything in there. It's a pretty big document. Something I thought was kind of an interesting phenomenon was that our enrollment actually decreased slightly this year, but our attendance increased. So that was interesting, and it's a good thing. Our K-3 staffing ratio in 2011-12 is set at 25 to 1. That's up from 23 to 1 in 2010-11. The other staffing ratios will remain at the same level as in the past. We continue to provide contributions to special ed, transportation, and maintenance. These contributions in 11-12 total to a little over $7 million. Excuse me. The VAPA resource, or our Visual and Performing Arts resource, is budgeted at the same level as it was last year, but we are discontinuing our contracts with consultants, so that's going to free up that money for other purposes related to visual and performing arts.
In your narrative, you'll notice that there, I think it's on page 9.4, there is separate columns for 09-10, 10-11, and 11-12 showing the strategic plan items that the district is still supporting. These are our past strategic plan items. And there will be some changes to these in the budget for 11-12 that we already know about. So we'll report those to you at first interim. There's also a new section here on the initiatives. It shows exactly where these are recorded in our budget so we can track them. It shows where the funding is coming from and whether at this moment it's ongoing or one-time funding. Now, if we look at the general fund summary, if I can remember how to use this. Here? Is it on? I don't even know if I'm pressing the right button. There we go. Okay. All right. Thank you. If you look at our total revenues between our estimated actuals for 10-11 and our projected budget for 11-12, you can see that our revenues are projected to decrease by about three fund balance of over $6 million. One thing I'd like to mention, though, is our 10-11 estimated actuals are based on budget, and we always have more in our budget than we actually spend, which is how it should be. When you start spending more than you have in your budget, you're really in trouble. Go back one. Go back one. You skipped one. There we go. So I'm thinking that our ending balance, by the time we report to you for unaudited actuals, is actually going to be a little bit bigger than it was on there. Now, when you take that ending balance of 15.5 million on the previous slide, and you subtract out our components of the ending balance, our set asides, you'll see that our unappropriated balance is about $40,000. Again, if we actually, when we close our books, I think our ending balance will be a little bit higher than that. Thank you. Okay, now what I do. I need the magic touch here.
Love it.
Yeah. I'm just glad it's not just me. Okay. Thank you. Okay, these are the graphs that are included in your budget binder, and this shows the historical trend of our property taxes. As you can see, we're on sort of a nice incline there between 2000 and 2001 and 2008, 2009, and then everything sort of leveled off. And we're anticipating that it's going to stay fairly level for the next couple of years at least. If San Luis Coastal were a revenue limit district, you can see that our 11-12 projection, we receive about $21,800,000 more as a basic aid district than we would as a revenue limit district. And sometimes it helps our perspective to see that as on a per student basis, which is this next slide, which shows that in 11-12, per student, we receive about $8,400. And if we were revenue limit, we'd only receive about $5,200. That's our deficit of revenue limit amount.
Julie, can you go back to that slide for a minute, please? Thinking back to what you said, Russell, about the status of the state budget, the $5,200 that would be our revenue limit, that doesn't include categoricals. Is that correct?
That's correct. It does not include the restricted programs.
So if our restricted programs, if
if we added the categoricals on top of our what our ADA would be, what would our total per pupil revenue?
Mm-hmm. We've got two different numbers in there, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. I guess what I'm thinking is, I'm just wondering, if we were looking strictly at this, we would have the blue line, and on top of that blue line would be the additional categorical monies that we get.
Yeah.
And so, I was just wondering what our total per pupil hit would be if Brownlee's bill passes, and I don't think you can answer that.
If it's $4 million that decide to add to the revenue limit, that would be our money that we would add. And you have 7,000 kids. So
whatever the math is on that.
$500 per 500 and something. That'd be an additional put on the purple, but it would also be an additional amount on, no, not necessarily. Well, it's about $550 per student if you assume $4 million worth of categorical money.
So we'd still be in the good.
Yes.
As a basic aid school district.
Definitely.
But not nearly as well.
$21 million is the spread.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
But the categoricals they put on the revenue limit is not that big.
So about 18 million better.
Yeah.
Than, okay. Thank you.
Chris, just real quick. Yeah. Russell, as I understand the Brownlee bill, it's not just a doing away with basic aid, but it's going to be weighted by the needs of each student individually.
There's going to be a weighted piece to it. I've heard students, I've heard school, I've heard district. They're trying to figure out an equalization formula, but in order to ensure passage, at least for the basic bill to get out, they gutted out the equalization language because it was too contentious. And so it becomes very difficult for LA to say that they have enough money. And whenever you don't include them in the equalization formula, it seems to fall apart because they won't support it unless they get a lot of extra money for their needs.
No problem. This graph sort of illustrates what we talked about with our general fund summary. You can see that I think the blue line is our beginning balance, which is about the same level as 10-11. But then that red or whatever color that is line is our income, and that's gone down by quite a bit. And this doesn't really reflect it, but in 11-12, our expenditures are also going up. So our available funds are actually a little bit lower than they were last year. Excuse me. And as you can see, our unrestricted lottery revenue has kind of gone down over the years. This is related to our ADA, so if our ADA is going down, our lottery funding is also going down, and it's sort of leveled out over the last few years, and so is our ADA. Thank you. And I know that your binders include a lot of information. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have on anything.
I'm going to actually open it to this to the public, if any member of the public would like to address the board on this item. Yes, come forward and please state your name.
Scott Nairn, San Luis Obispo. Glad to be here. Just a quick question on the prudence of raising class size at the K through 3 level. Maybe if the board has an understanding of that and could explain it.
If it comes, we have to go to 26, because then we will be penalized on our K-3 class size reduction money to the extent that we've exceeded their hard cap of 25-1. So in staffing, looking at the issues, we decided that 25-1 is the reality and the truth of where we find ourselves. Because when we're faced with a 23-1 class size staffing formula and actual kids show up for a school, and it's in their neighborhood, we're loath to send them on a bus 20, 40 minutes away simply because we have a 23 limit. Or there's siblings that go to that school, or there's other issues that the family sustainability for the child is allowing it to go to its neighborhood school if it's a 23, 24, 25 number. So that's our justification for going to 25-1.
But what Scott might be asking, I can't speak for him, but how does the going from 23 to 25 help close the achievement gap?
Well, I think that as educators, we all have heard the mantra of research on the class size reduction number. And it's my understanding and belief that there is no research that says a 23 or a 20 or a 25 will produce better student achievement. That, in fact, the number is once you get below 14, you might see some increases in student achievement, but anything else is a matter of great teaching. And if you have good teachers teaching K-3, which I think we do, then student achievement will follow accordingly.
Okay. I found studies that say differently, so I just was curious. I have not seen the study on the 14, but I found like Wisconsin would say class sizes, smaller class sizes up through third grade help close the achievement gap amongst African Americans. Tennessee studies K-3 class size programs increase high school graduation rate. So it's something I think we need to be careful of, our class sizes overall. Dr. Prater?
Yeah, I can speak to that. I'm familiar with both the Wisconsin study and the Tennessee project study. I'm very familiar with both of them. The difference in those studies, first of all, I want to allow common sense to come forward too, you know, no mm-hmm. doubt, fewer kids, that's going to have less of an impact on management issues, on attention issues. There's a study recently done in Great Britain that actually identified a level where they say, okay, if you have students, if 16 to 18 students in a classroom, when you raise that number up by a factor of 5, you have as many as 25% more students off task at any portion of the period. Now, that's how specific they got. That's fine and good. However, the Wisconsin and Tennessee studies based the state committed to 14-to-1 ratios. And third was an ongoing commitment to it, not up and down and changing the ratios and changing the funding patterns. Over a period of 5 years, what they found in a 14-to-1 ratio is that the higher performing students continued to perform at a high level. The transference of at-risk students, minority students, economically disadvantaged students seem to have the greatest transference and benefit from those smaller class sizes, i.e. 14-to-1, with professional development, adequate professional development, and adequate facilities. All of those things considered, there was a difference, and it was transferable through the secondary level. Those studies are holding their ground. California, as an example, in 1996, committed to, under Pete Wilson, Governor Wilson, committed to a 20-to-1 ratio despite the recommendation from the educational establishment that said you needed to get it down to 16. Well, the numbers didn't pan out. He couldn't get the viability of the economic component in place. So they threw the 20-to-1 at us. I know I was around when that happened. They threw it at us. School districts had to manage it. Now, teachers were never given the opportunity to develop capacity, instructional capacity. So the problem with the research, and this is what Russell Miller was referring to, the problem with the research since that point is that it's inconclusive in California because those factors were not properly considered that I had mentioned in Wisconsin and in Tennessee. And though it's valuable, the problem is it hasn't been sustainable consistently across time with all those factors built in. So in a way, they set us up for failure in that regard. Now, is there a difference between 20 and 25? Of course, that's 5 extra students in a class. Does it mean that all these classes will be at 25? Probably not, because kids don't come in perfect ratios into sites. The reason for the 25-to-1 hard cap, the way I'm looking at it, is it should remain similar to what we have currently. But the difference is it gives us some flexibility if classes come in at 23 to hold tight to that. And if extra kids come in, we can still expand it. So we have other staffing issues to consider because some schools with open enrollment, those staffing ratios change, and we're dealing with it every day leading up to the end of the school year. So with all that said, I hope what I can tell you is I have this debate at home with my wife. 20 to 1 is ideal, but it's very expensive. And the research in 20 to 1 does not stand out versus 14 to 1. That does stand out, and that's significant. So does 20 to 25 or 20 to 23, is that significant? I would suggest
insertion. You're welcome. Thank you.
But is this related to the – okay, go ahead. Then I want to go back to the public.
I'm sorry. As I've looked at this and started to get some feedback from community, the cap at 25 to 1 has triggered a lot of discussion. And as I thought about it, we have this ratio of 25 to 1 for teachers. And as I understand it, in some of our upper grades, we have a cap, and then we have a trigger number that allows or almost immediately places an aide into that classroom. And so what I'm wondering is if we look at this, and especially maybe in kindergarten and first grade in those lower levels, that we have a trigger number somewhere maybe below 25 to 1, not my expertise, but that there's a trigger number that allows us then to change the ratio of adults to students and bring in those paraprofessionals to help. And I'd really like us to take a look at that in these lower grades. I don't know if there's any support for that, but and I don't know if there's any research on it.
I can just comment that what Mr. Buckman's referring to, as the board is probably aware, that we every year come to the board, usually in the fall, to it's not a contractual thing, but it's something we've done for many years. In our fourth through sixth grade, at a certain threshold, if a class has a certain number of students, I think it's 32. I have a couple elementary principals out there to remind me. I think it's 32 students. That triggers a one-hour class size aide. If it gets up to 33, they get 2 hours. If it hits the 35 mark, it's 3 hours. Combination classes have class size aides built into it at a lower ratio. So certainly something, you know, we could look at. We've never done that with the K-3. It's been a fourth through sixth grade program.
I know I would support that, especially in the kindergarten where students are tested individually. You know, it's not like you just give a piece of paper and say, oh, take this test, let me grade it later. It's, you know, you have the student right in front of you, and you're testing all kinds of different things throughout the year as the demands have increased because of standards on our kindergarten teachers.
Mr. Unger.
Yes. Go ahead, Mrs. Roger.
Yeah, I think that our 4 to 6 teachers are already laboring under a fairly heavy burden. I'd be hard-pressed to look a fifth-grade teacher in the eye who has to have 30, what did Mr. Robinette just say it was, 35 students in order to get 1 hour of aid time and support a kindergarten teacher who has just over 20 students to get the same hour of aid time.
You know, I think I'm going to let these guys, because my understanding is there's the difference that Phil just talked about, but there's a difference in what happens in a kindergarten class as opposed to an upper grade, and I'm not trying to suggest the actual number and what the trigger or what did you call it, Rick? What the threshold is. I'm just trying to.
On 22nd, I'm asking the principals to lay the initiatives on the single school plans so we have that coherence, and we'll hear from them what they anticipate the needs and challenges being. We for me, the greater challenge is going to be combination classes. I've been around long enough to see that 25 to 1 in a K-3 is not nearly as challenging as a 3-4 combo. That, to me, represents all kinds of challenges. So those are the things that I'm looking for, and not to suggest that 25 to 1 isn't a challenge. It is a challenge, but I do believe with the support we're going to provide in terms of professional development and site-specific type training, I think we'll get there. It's the combination classes I'm keeping my eyes on.
Okay. Yeah, so I think what the board's concern, and I'm glad we had this discussion, is the support that teachers get no matter what their class sizes are, and then an ongoing discussion that we've had and we've heard from teachers time and time again is the concern about combination classes and the difficulty of teaching combination classes. Is there anybody else from the public that would like to address us on the item of the agenda, Mrs. Blakely?
I would just like to suggest that there's a lot of food for thought, and tonight isn't the drop-dead date to vote. You actually have more time to take input and massage the information, and I'm suggesting that, to coin the phrase of somebody who used to work in our district, since nobody's hair is on fire tonight, that you take that additional time and think about it, and maybe ask more questions and do what you need to do to hopefully arrive at the answer I'd like to see on June 21st. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I saw someone else back there that would like to address us on this item. And if you could state your name, please.
I'm Diana Rell. I teach at Bishop's Peak Elementary School, and I teach a 1-2 combo. And I'm just really confused with, like, the 3-4, because that would still be 25 to 1 because it has the 3 attached to it. And just the rising of the numbers, it seems like a contradiction to me to have 9 teachers on special assignment and spend $1.6 million but to increase our class sizes. If we have that money to spend, our class sizes should stay small. But then I heard a lot about the number of 14 and how that was studied, and that's a good number. So it seems to me we should be going down and not up. That's a really big concern from most people at my site that I've heard. They're not necessarily excited about a TOSA at their site. They'd rather have their class size smaller. That would affect the students, having smaller class sizes, and not continue to creep them up. If the studies show under 20, then we should be going down. And looking through here, I'm concerned about, it says VAPA expenditures have been budgeted at the same rate as 2010-11. However, the contracted outside consultants have been eliminated. Mm-hmm. So we have the money, but we don't get to have our artists in residence anymore, the two different ones that we had.
I'm going to close the public portion of this. Are there other board members who have comments on this particular item, Mr. Buckman?
And we're talking the particular item being the budget?
Yes, the budget, item number 9.
Thank you. I think we're living in really uncertain budget times. Everything that Chris and I hear from CSBA and I hear from PTA, we don't know if there's going to be the tax extensions. We really are sort of building this budget maybe on a house of cards yet again. And one of the references in the document is that as we learn more information, we'll deal with it at first interim. And I think we need to be realistic that first interim is in December, and we may have some more information about money, either good or bad, as soon as this budget's adopted or in July or in August or in November, if there's actually an initiative going on. So I'd like to really suggest that we somehow commit to coming back within 2 weeks of some, and pick a dollar amount, but come back within 2 weeks after a major change in the funding, either good or bad, and deal with it somewhat immediately rather than waiting till December 31st. It may allow us to look at some programs and to make some adjustments that are either good or bad. So I'm throwing it out there because December is a long time away.
What we can do is we can make the board aware of any funding changes that are related to this, and the board then can take action as they deem fit. What we always have done is first interim is our first opportunity to make major adjustments, but there is a phrase of the law about budgets that you have 45 days to adjust your budget after the enactment of a state budget, and that would be within this window of operations that we can do that. So what Mr. Buckman suggests is probably a change, but it's a good change. So we'll bring back information. You guys digest it. You want to make changes, fine. If you want to just, you know, wait until December, that's fine too. Either way, we can adapt.
Yeah, I have a question on page 9-5 of the budget, but it's really on the Fund 20, and it's just a question about the interest from the approximately $9.3 million. I was a little surprised that I wondered what the $35,000 figure was, and what are the, I guess my question is, what are the restrictions on investment of that money that get us a return of a fraction of 1% on that amount of money?
The restrictions on that money in terms of investments are the same in all of our funds. We need to go with the local agency investment fund or the county treasury or some such well thought out and protected investment. The actual return on LAIF and county agencies last year was, I think, on an average over 12 months, less than 0.75. But we're restricted in where we can put it. We can't put it into stock market, municipal bond funds, or anything that.
And probably a good idea after Orange County in the 90s. So.
Right.
I would not want to risk the core funding of different funds. You know, this is just, even if it earned no interest, that would be okay with me.
The question I have about that, though, is inflation will eat that amount up faster than it earns money.
In a heartbeat. Part of the issue, though, is interest will raise as inflation goes up also. So theoretically, your returns would increase. But inflation is an insidious action of the economy, and it will always exceed your earnings on passive earnings on investments. So we're kind of stuck in a vicious cycle, but I don't feel comfortable taking risks beyond the two funds that are so secure we can go to sleep at night and know that money won't disappear on us except for through inflation. But
as I understand you, Russell, there is a legal limitation. I mean, we're required to invest it in those funds.
We're required to invest it in certain types of funds,
certain
of which LAIF is a great example, yes.
Thank you.
Other comments from board members regarding item number 9? Mr. Angel.
Thank you for my diatribe on class size. What I forgot to mention, because Mr. Narn primed the pump there, is the budget staff did a great job. Fiscal services did a great job preparing this and educating us and answering phone calls, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
I just had one little question here. On page 9.4, I was noticing that we had nothing budgeted in the coming year for an after-school late bus, and I had made the notation by that. What about after-school scaffolding? Don't we have at least at Laguna some after-school programs for double-dosing students?
Yes, and actually that's just being funded through our transportation now instead of through strategic plan.
So we still have late buses.
It's still happening.
Yeah, we took it out of the strategic funding and just folded it into our core program of transportation.
Okay,
and after-school bus is now part of our home-to-school transportation runs.
Thank you.
No other comments from board members regarding the budget? We've been asked to approve this budget, and I, I need to say that I appreciate you all coming here. One of the issues and one of the reasons that you're here is because you support the Adults with Disabilities Program, and that's clearly a part of this budget. In my mind, those are both important things, but I am going to state categorically that I support the initiatives. And I believe that that's my priority at this time, and that's why I'm going to support the budget as it's proposed by the superintendent. I would ask that we continue to look for ways of funding that program. I hate to think of this as an either.
What would amount to general fund expenditures. And I think there are creative solutions that just I haven't had a chance to explore. I've begun the process. I just haven't had a chance to get out there. This would allow myself and the host agencies who I've contacted and met with to look at alternative solutions that gives us some running room. And I imagine I might be coming back to the board to discuss what some of those might look like. I'm hopeful that we can find grants, we can find alternative models that haven't been explored yet because we haven't had to explore them. Now we have to. So, but as we're looking at this budget, as we're looking into the future and recognizing some, as you mentioned in that report, some of the really upsetting data in terms of some of our achievement levels, I think we need to act very aggressively. And that's what the initiatives reflect. That's what the budget reflects. And we're at a precarious time where it's a moving picture. So I'm hopeful that we can come up with some creative solutions. I will specifically work to try to come up with them and work as a team with the adults with disability staff and the host agencies to come up with some creative solutions. Hopefully we can come up with that, and that's what I will work on.
When thinking forward in time to December 31st, you know, we're talking about 6.5 months now, something like that. When might we know what alternatives are available or might become available? I think this is very clearly important to the community that's here. And, think it's a subject that's important to the board.
I'm hopeful that we can find some donors that have not emerged to fill this need and or come up with some host agencies that could collaborate with cities, regions to come up with some grant dollars that could fit this need more appropriately. So those are the things I'll come back to you throughout the summer and into the fall as I learn more. At minimum, we fully recognize this. These are members of our instructional community. They've been with us for longer than 30 years in some cases, and I want to take that as seriously as I can. And I imagine that what we might come up with at minimum are some alternative employment opportunities. There might be some ways to look at credentialing, things that I just haven't had a chance to put my mind around. But nevertheless, I think this is a hard reality that I'm asking you to consider.
Okay. Thank you. Board members, are there any other comments?
Mr. Unger, as in reference to Mr. Buckman's earlier wish to bring back revenues for the boards to look at, the first interim is actually October 31st, and it'll come forward to you, but sure. And it's an opportunity to discuss programs that have been cut at that time and meet our needs and importance to our district then.
Okay. Thank you. We have been asked to approve the budget this evening. Jim?
Just for make sure that I'm clear on it, and if perhaps the public is clear on it, even though on page 9.5 of the budget, and it's the second bullet point, even though the district did not budget expenditures for salaries and expenses related to the Adults with Disabilities Program, It is our understanding if we adopt this budget is that we will continue that until the 31st of this year.
That's what the superintendent has proposed here tonight.
Okay, fine.
That would be incorporated into the budget if you pass the budget tonight, the recommendation Dr. Prater put forward.
Thank you.
Well, again, we've been asked to take a vote on the budget tonight. I would remind the board, of course, that the budget needs to be passed no later than the end of this month. So I'm going to see if anybody would like to make a motion to pass item number 9.
I would so move. Pass item number 9.
Been moved by Mrs. Sheffer. Is there a second?
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any further discussion on this item? Seeing none, I'll ask for the vote. All in favor of item number 9? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
So the budget, the item number 9 passes, 5 ayes and 1 nay. Thank you. Move on to the action discussion, action consent agenda. Okay, let's move on to the action consent agenda. Item number 10, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item number 11, acceptance of donations. Item number 12, approval of summer field trips. Item number 13, and item number 13 was revised, and that's approval of furniture and equipment requests. Yes, item number 13 is pulled by Mr. Buckman. Item number 14, approval of purchase orders. And item number 15, approval of warrants and payroll. Can I have a motion for this, please?
I would approve items 10, 11, 12, 14, and 15 under the action consent.
Okay. Items 10, 11, 12, 14, and 15. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been seconded by Mr. Angel. Is there any discussion on the action consent agenda? Okay. Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Item number 13, Mr. Buckman.
Yeah. I stopped at this item because of the purchase of the...
Do we have a second on that? Seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Any discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 617, advanced agenda. Is there anybody that would like to discuss advanced agenda items? Mr. Buckman.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is negligent.
Okay. Okay. Well, no advanced agenda items at this moment. I think we have plenty on our plates. Let's move to item number 18, reports by board members. Does anybody have any
question on advanced agenda?
Yes. I'm sorry. Go, sir.
Do we need to talk about our meeting for next week?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Mrs. Holmes, the board met during our meeting. The board realizes that we need to have a meeting, I believe
for
it's for the superintendent's evaluation. It will be a closed session meeting. I believe it's the 15th, Wednesday the 15th. At 7:15, and the place is to be determined, although we believe it's going to be Sunnyside School in Los Osos at the Family Resource Center. Thank you. At the Family Resource Center at Sunnyside. And so that would be noticed as a closed session meeting. Okay. So reports by board members, item number 18. I got a couple, but go for it.
Open house season, had a chance to go to a lot of open houses. One common theme I know, open houses and a couple music performances. And one I wanted to point out was the
combined elementary, junior high, and high school music performance here in San Luis. Just great work done by all our music teachers, especially the elementary, getting our kids interested, getting them performing well, and I'm just excited to see some of those sixth graders go up to middle school next year and then up to high school with some great music. And then also had a chance to hang out with the Baywood staff at the AXA dinner where Mr. Jennison was site administrator of the year. Just what a great group of individuals that he has to lead. No wonder he's the site administrator of the year.
Mr. Buckman.
Yes, thank you, sir. Again, I just want to reiterate what some of my fellow board members said. We're at the critical point on the budget. It's imperative that we let the legislators know what's going on. One of the most effective ways that we can do that is to share personal stories of what's happening in our district or within our county. Secondly, I had the opportunity to speak at the alumni meeting of the Transforming Ourselves Leadership. This is a program that takes folks from within the community and trains them to be leaders. Phenomenal program, and hopefully we'll start seeing them within our site councils and DLAC committees. I also would like to say that I personally have been trying to speak to groups about the budget and have been speaking throughout the county, and it's been a really good reception. So,
Checo, and would like to report that it struck me as a very normal elementary dismissal, as my mother would say, because there were eight of us children, it was organized chaos, but it didn't last more than 15 minutes. And the parking on Farini seemed, there were cars already there parked, and they were there when the parents and kids were gone. So it didn't seem extraordinary to me, and I received assurances that if the pre-K gets going and running, that those schedules would be staggered so you wouldn't have an additional 20 cars or what have you coming to pick up students. So just wanted to report that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Sheffer.
I want to express my gratitude to Bishop's Peak for the opportunity to have worked as a volunteer there for the last few months in the library. It was wonderful for me to have the experience to be around the children and also be available for staff for questions and to attend the volunteer tea and have the opportunity to speak with parents about the initiatives and the school. So in addition to some of the other end of the year events, I wanted to specifically thank Bishop's Peak for the opportunity to serve as a volunteer there.
And I had an opportunity to go to several open houses as well. I want to thank Delmar, Baywood, Pacheco, and Smith for welcoming me there. And then, of course, I, along with, I think it was Mr. Quisenberry, got to go to the Morro Bay High Band concert. It was pretty exciting. It was pretty cool. Mr. Bellier put on another great show, Morro Bay and Los Osos Middle Schools. On that note, seeing nobody else, I think we'll adjourn this meeting. Thank you very much.